Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Helping people with their spiritual development and business ventures. And I do my work because I must.
That is excellent. We are glad that you do your work. Everyone, Maureen is one of our most highly sought psychics. You can find her at psychicaccess.com. I also have with me tonight a very talented co-panelist named Steve Frampton. Hi, Steve. How are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Stephen.
Oh, so happy to hear that. We're glad to have you with us here tonight on the Psychic Viewpoint. Can you please describe for all of our listeners your various psychic specialties at psychicaccess.com?
Sure. I'm a psychic medium, so I connect with people that have passed to spirit, and that enables us to provide evidence of the afterlife, which I find extremely healing for people and also for myself. I've obviously got a very strong and confident faith in the afterlife and the presence of the spirit world. So often we feel that we're alone in the world,
right,
or that we have to make things happen ourselves. But we have all manner of support and resources and love available to us in spirit. I'm also an astrologer, hermetic astrologer, and I very much enjoy looking at world events through astrology, making predictions about world events, and also using astrological techniques to help people better understand themselves and time events in their lifetimes.
Oh, very nice, very nice. If you listening would like to find out what sort of love is available for you from the spirit world, from the other side, by all means, give Stephen Frampton a call at psychicaccess.com. Last but not least, we have here with us tonight, Nona Marie. Nona, how are you doing?
I'm just wonderful. Thank you for asking.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. Tonight is your show. We're going to be talking about the spirit of Kuan Yin, channeling the spirit of Kuan Yin. Very excited about that. But before we get started, can you share with all of us some of what your psychic specialty is?
Well, I work with no tools when I'm on the phone lines. When I work privately, I do use numerology and like to look at life charts. But on the phone lines, I like to get quick answers. So I just tune in. And I also do talk to people who have crossed over. That's a relatively new skill that I've had, and it's lots and lots of interesting information. And I agree with Steve, it's very, very healing to do that kind of work. It really helps people get a little bit of closure, especially if somebody is unclear as to why someone crossed over or crossed over so quickly. It's very helpful.
Well, that is amazing. We're glad to have you here with us tonight. Can you please describe your guest for us a little bit?
I will. This is Meg McLaughlin, and she is developed the skill of channeling the spirit of Kuan Yin. She is not a trance channeler, and we're going to discuss the difference between partial trance versus full trance channeling. She came into it a little bit later in life after being a mother and raising a child. And I find that particularly interesting because sometimes I'll hear people say wistfully, "Oh, I bet you were always this way." And I love to talk to people who weren't always tuned into special gifts but got it later in life, so we can learn about how that happens and how we develop those skills and how we can embrace it into a lifestyle. It can sometimes be a little bit disruptive when you are living one life. For example, Meg was a scriptwriter for animated children's television series. And then she started channeling, and that's quite a cultural shock to bring into your life and bring into your family, et cetera. So I think it's going to be very, very interesting for us to find out all this information from her.
Yeah, we're trying to get Meg on the line right now. I have to tell you, it's extremely interesting, though, this system of Kuan Yin and her involvement with mm-hmm. some of these Eastern spiritual systems. So I'm very looking forward to having Ms. McLaughlin really enlighten all of us about this spiritual system from the East that I've never, ever heard of before.
Well, and actually, I'm very interested, too. I see Meg is on. Hi, Meg.
Hi.
Hi. Because I've known Meg for years, but I've never actually been able to grab her and interrogate her about all this interesting material that I find so fascinating as well. So I'm looking forward to hearing her story as well. So thank you for coming on tonight, Meg. I love it.
You're welcome. I'm feeling a little shy now.
Well, not a problem. I have enough bravery for both of us.
Excellent.
So what I'd like to start off with is your sort of before you became a born-again channeler, what was your life as a normal person, an earth person, and what were you doing and what happened that the channeling began?
I was a single mom. And I had a sort of a freelance career writing children's television programs, cartoons mainly, like Spider-Man and Clifford the Big Red Dog and things like that, Incredible Hulk, which was a freelance career, so that largely means I was mostly unemployed. So
right. I understand totally.
A starving single parent living with, you know, basically depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I didn't stumble across channeling or stumble across Kuan Yin. I sort of stumbled across a meditation practice mm-hmm. that somebody told me about, and I went to an intro night and met this teacher and was hooked, not realizing that I, you know, was looking for something or that my life needed reform or saving. But it really did, and I was really quite lucky to stumble across this. So I became a rather avid meditator, mm-hmm. in fits and starts anyway.
And then, let me ask you, before this group, were you doing any kind of spiritual practice at all, or was this the first time you were really even getting into meditation?
This is the first time I was really even getting into meditation. I was not doing anything. I had been raised a Catholic, so, you know, I was in a deep recovery.
Okay. Amazing. So, and what kept you going to the group? Because I know the teacher that you study with, and that kind of meditation is rather strange, which we'll talk about in a little bit here. What was it that kept you coming back, given that this was your first introduction? And also, how did you find the group?
I had a friend that worked in the animation industry with me. And, you know, the studio had sort of dissolved and we'd gone our separate ways, but we would get together from time to time. So I met her for lunch one day and we did our whole lunch and everything. And I was dropping her off at her company, which was on Wilshire Boulevard, so I was kind of double parked. Cars were honking at me, and she was getting out of the car. She turned back and kissed me and said, "Oh, by the way, I went and saw this guy, and he hit me on the back, and I made this noise like this. Oh!" And I said, "I want to go." I know.
Love it. That wasn't Jane Ubell by any chance, was it?
No, it was Kim Adelsey.
Okay, because I actually met our teacher the same way through someone in the industry, basically a little story like that also. Very funny.
Yeah.
So you went to the group, and you were expecting to be hit on the back and make a noise, and what happened that kept you coming back?
I think it was there was a tremendous energy of actually being held there. I was not prepared for any of it, and I really didn't think about it at all. I just thought, oh, I like this, and I'm coming back. Mm-hmm. I mean, there wasn't a lot of consciousness, but looking back, it feels like I was really just held, and it was very comforting to me to, you know, somewhat a mutual friend who came to that first night I went with me couldn't believe that I came back because he said, oh, the teacher was so mean to you. And I said, what? He was? Really? I didn't think so. I thought, oh, he sees me and that feels good. So
that's funny.
Yeah.
Very funny. And so how long were you seeing this teacher before? And we should explain, I study with this teacher also, and there's actually, in a way, two teachers. There is Liang Tan, who is a Chinese man who grew up in Malaysia, who is I would call him a Taoist master. And he trans-channels a spirit named Wang Lo, Sensi meaning teacher. And Wang Lo has never been a human. He has always been a spirit. So we kind of study with both of them. And so what was the transition from going to the group into beginning to do more than just attending as a meditator? How did you develop into that?
So it was Liang Tan. He asked me to initiate with him specifically and be sort of his student slash apprentice. Mm-hmm. And that was about 8 years into it.
And did you know what that meant at the time?
No. And it probably would not have mattered at the time because, you know, whatever my ego wanted was what it was going to be, no matter what anybody said to me, right?
Right. Got it. I got it. And did you start channeling right away or what was that like? How long was it before you started channeling and how were you introduced to the concept? Did Liang say to you one day, hey, you're going to channel, or how did that come about?
Yes. So backing up just a little bit, attending retreats with Liang, he did one specifically that he'd do out in Prim Springs, Tennessee, where it was sort of a more advanced retreat. And he was teaching people to channel their higher selves. So this is like a half trance channel state, just requesting your highest self to come forward. And we would practice, and some could talk and some couldn't, and, you know, offer advice and guidance and energy work, practicing that way. So I sort of went a little, I took it a little farther and started doing that for fun, like parlor tricks with my friends. So that was my experience with it. And before I met Liang and the teacher, I had no experience of channeling except that I had seen a video of Ramtha.
Wow.
Like when I was 17 or something.
Wow. Yeah.
And I used to love to imitate that Ramtha voice, but never thought that I would be channeling. So after I initiated with Liang, he did say, because Liang is very close, he has a very strong place in his heart for Kuan Yin, and he had an aunt who channeled Kuan Yin, and so he instructed me to do that. So it's by request. It's not that I was walking down a trail, stumbled on a rock, and had a miraculous vision of the Kuan Yin. It was through training and request.
Right. Wow. And so after channeling sessions, would Liang give you feedback? Or when you say training, was it something other than just practice?
It was just practice.
Okay. All right.
I mean, he would witness it sometimes, and then it was like, okay, little bird.
Right.
On your own.
And so what's the difference between half trance channeling and full trance channeling?
So I would say that full trance channeling is where the channel is not conscious of the proceedings. So say in Liang Tan's case, he says he kind of goes off to the cave and is not aware of what goes on when Wang Lo Sinsi comes in. So a half trance channel has a level of consciousness while giving over to the energy as it comes in.
So does it sort of feel like you step to the side and there's someone else there with you, kind of feeling?
Yeah, it feels like sort of a downloading of energy, like the energy comes over me. And it's, you know, from time to time, and very much so in the beginning, it's been a struggle to not get too involved in what's going on, mm-hmm. and really consciously try to step aside.
Mm-hmm. Right. I would imagine that would be hard, especially seeing reactions of people sometimes, because when channeled energies come through, oftentimes they deliver messages that can be difficult. And if you're there watching people you know start to cry because of something you're channeling, that must be difficult.
It's very difficult because the energy of the Kuan Yin is very sensitive, very empathic. So even if the person's not crying, sometimes when someone comes before me when I'm channeling and they've got a wounding, it is the sensation of that is overwhelming, where I want to dissolve into weeping, mm-hmm. but do consciously try to maintain a professional demeanor. Kuan Yin will cry and will shed tears, and she will say, "Let me shed these tears for you."
Nice.
But for me, you know, it's not only the emotional impact, but it's me being afraid, like, wait, you're not going to say that to her, are you? Don't say that. You know, sometimes if I'm watching too closely, I get in a little struggle.
Yeah, yes. I have that sensation with doing readings sometimes. I have information and I know the person is simply not going to like what I'm going to say. And it's a real struggle to find a way to get through that.
That's right. Yeah. And the way through it is just straight ahead.
Right. Exactly.
Too much thinking is a real problem.
Exactly. I agree with that. When you channel, and I've heard Leong talk, and I know Ramtha is a trance channel through Jay-Z Knight also, and I've met some other trance channelers who say that when they are trance channeling and they leave, they go somewhere where they're getting a kind of education while the session is going on. So it's not like they just go into the twilight zone and go to sleep. They're actually getting some kind of training. So is that true with you, Meg? Do you think, is there something that happens to you that you get educated, or you get something out of the session?
Well, I will say yes, absolutely, but it's not so esoteric and subtle. I mean, it's, you know, I'm in a position to always be learning. As you know, I try to let the energy come forth and the words come out of my mouth, and that interaction happens with the group or the individual. It's, I know that whatever lesson they're getting is my lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's to be open to that is sometimes a challenge, but also very wonderful. But that whole thing of, you know, like I was saying, the ego getting involved, or being afraid of what's being said, or feeling the impact of the energy, all of that is a lesson in flow, for one thing, in trust and belief, and another, and in absolute humility. And every day I am humbled by this process, even though I want big things or little things or whatever it is. It is an absolutely humbling process. And I think that lesson is, you know, until I die, that is going to be my lesson.
Can you explain why that's humbling?
Probably my biggest problem is my battle with my ego, not in that I'm looking for greatness or that I think I'm great. It's that my worry of doing wrong and wanting to be impactful and wanting to heal and to fix things and to be really wise and put on a big show.
Mm-hmm.
you know? Because I do take money for it, and I, you know, I want it to be worth it to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm supposed to be helping people. I want to be helping people, so I really want that, you know.
Right.
And I want to look for reflection that's happening. So that's one way. It's like, if I can just, for even the briefest moment, let that go, that's when magic happens. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with me at all. And I get that lesson over and over again. It's like, forget about it. It's, you know, magic happens when you're not watching the pot, when you're not in charge, when you're just surrendered. And that is an amazing practice in humility to me. The other thing is that people, and working with people, you know, sometimes you have clients that are tough and you know, you get frustrated. Why don't you get it? You know, and that's another time when I'm like, yeah, why don't you get it, Meg? But they are so touching and so amazing given the slightest chance. And people are so kind to me and so accepting. That is absolutely humbling.
Hmm. Well said. I like all of those descriptions. That's just really, I think, a really intricate description of having any kind of spiritual talent. It is this combination of an ego and wanting to be of service, and at the same time, you have to get completely out of the way and let things happen that you really have no control over. You're just like a cord that plugs into one piece of energy, and then you plug into the person and let it flow through you.
Yeah.
Good description. Do you think that anybody can learn to channel?
I think, yes, that anybody can learn to channel. I think that we come in with the same equipment, you know, and I don't know why some people are spontaneous channels and that's their gift or their path in life. I don't know why, but I think anybody could learn to channel at mm-hmm. the very least. And that's what I like to teach people, is to, you know, sort of on a daily basis, channel their own inner wisdom. That's what we're doing when we're pursuing a spiritual practice and trying to integrate it with our everyday life.
Well said. So why do you think, let me ask this, what was the difference between channeling your higher self and then channeling Kuan Yin? How did you know the difference? How could you feel it? And aside from Liang's affection for Kuan Yin, is there any other reasons you think that Kuan Yin is coming in?
So the difference is that making the request to the Kuan Yin energy, that's like I think everybody has that energy in them, and they have that capacity for that compassionate heart of Kuan Yin. So I think when I request that energy, it does sort of connect with something in me. But it's like channeling my higher self, only turbocharged.
Oh, I see. I see. And if somebody has never been to your workshop and they would say to you, well, who exactly is Kuan Yin, and why does Kuan Yin come through to us humans? What would you say about that?
Well, I would say, you know, that Kuan Yin basically is the bodhisattva of compassion. Some people add the word mercy in there, and it's an archetype that's been around forever, tracing it back to Indian spirituality as Avalokiteshvara, which was a male deity. And then as Buddhism moved toward China, Kuan Yin became the feminine entity. And so I think it's the, you know, the divine feminine energy opening the heart to compassion and charity. And I think that, you know, and there's a lot of stories about how Kuan Yin came about and why she's a bodhisattva and not a Buddha, because she wanted to have the ability, rather than living in nirvana, she wanted to have the ability to come back and help all sentient beings. So she retained this level of bodhisattva so she'd be able to do that. And that's just an example of how giving she is. She sort of refused her Buddhahood so she could still come down and help people. And I think, you know, this divine feminine is very relevant today in people's interest in moving toward greater spirituality and world peace and love and compassion. I mean, I think that's a trend. It's an Age of Aquarius trend. Yeah. That's going on that everybody can relate to. And it's not, I don't think the energy is different from the Mother Mary or all the feminine ideals out there.
Right. Could you say more about the difference between a bodhisattva and Buddha? Is it like, for example, I just recently was told the distinction between being a medium and someone who works with earthbounds, which is what people call ghosts, is that the earthbounds always have a physical manifestation. They, in other words, they move things around in the house, they rattle things, and there's different issues with ghost bounds as opposed to those who have crossed over who continue to stay in touch with us on earth. And then there are those who have crossed over who have moved on, and then there's angelic forces that are not necessarily human at all. So where does the Buddha and Bodhisattva delineations, where do they fall?
Well, I think they're basically talking about levels of attainment and transcendence. So the Bodhisattva has not reached the level of Buddhahood. I mean, I may not be really qualified to talk about this, but this is as I understand it. So she sort of, so Buddhahood would be the ultimate enlightenment, right? And so like Bodhisattva would be a rung under that, as I understand it.
So maybe perhaps like more like an angelic force.
Yes, I would say.
Doing service to humanity and, oh, lovely. So when you began channeling, how did you explain this to your family and people who know you? Because that must have been quite a change there. I would imagine there was also some change in you as you started channeling on a more regular basis.
I suppose so.
Well, certainly your work changed, you know, from being a freelance scriptwriter to doing this kind of work full time.
Yeah, it certainly did change. And it changed me. I'm a very secretive person. So there aren't that many family members that I've given the full explanation of what I do to. So I'm pretty shy about it, although I have, you know, I don't think I've ever channeled for my mother, for instance, but I definitely do energy sessions with her and healing work with her. And I have done channeling sessions for my sisters, a couple of my sisters and brother-in-laws. And, but like, I posted this on Facebook yesterday and my cousins shared it. And I'm like, I haven't even ever spoken to my cousins about what I do. And I thought, this is it. This is truly a coming out, isn't it? What if they tune in?
So when you do energy work, is that Kuan Yin doing the work, or is that you doing the work, or is it do you switch off? And
yeah, so if I'm channeling Kuan Yin will very often volunteer a sort of energy work or energetic blessing. And that is not enforced by me. And then if it's just me, I will offer that for someone. But I will say this, I think that energy comes in from time to time when I'm in a healing session with somebody. And they will often talk about having more than just my hands on them. They'll feel other pressures or energies. And I think, you know, part of that is just the energy moving, and that's, you know, a good session going on. But I think that, you know, we were just talking about angelic forces. I think that that energy comes in to help.
So has Kuan Yin ever come in, like say you were with a family member or helping your mother, and then Kuan Yin comes in kind of unexpectedly, and then there might be some embarrassment afterwards to if somebody says, "What was that?" And it's a family member who's not really sure of the work you do. Have you ever had experiences like that? I know some other trans channelers have sometimes talked about that they sort of have woken up and find everybody crying, and someone came in and they have no clue what happened, and they're like, "What did I do?"
No, I'm simply not that surrendered. It has happened where I've been in a session with someone, or you know, in a workshop, and I felt the energy want to come in, and then I decide whether I want to allow it or not.
Oh,
and
okay.
And more often than not, I will allow it. But no, not with family members so much.
And so, two questions about channeling. Also, is one is, do you ever feel other beings that want to come in? And I know a number of people have expressed fear of this. About once you open yourself up, what's to prevent you from being taken over by, like, David Icke's seventh dimensional reptilian beings or any other evil spirits that are out there?
I don't know. Maybe it's happened. Who's to say I'm really me right now?
Are you eating earthworms or anything?
No, cherries. But, well, while I'm channeling and in that state, I have had other visitors come in or want to come in. And the main one is a warrior aspect that comes in that I kind of associate with my teacher. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is something comes in that always shows me the image of Ganesh. So I call it Ganesh. And it's a very wonderful, happy energy that doesn't speak English yet.
So, and you're not afraid of some strange, unwelcome, unknown entities grabbing you? And
I really am not afraid of that, because I am twice initiated, so I feel like there's protection and blessing. And then the other side of it is, and this goes back to you asking if everybody can channel, my training is to work on a strong foundation so that I do not lose myself to some other force.
Got it. And what does that mean, double initiated?
So I initiated with the teacher, Wang Lo Xinxi, and I initiated again later with Liang Tan.
Oh, I see. Okay. Did you get a tattoo or anything? I'm kidding.
Well, I do. It's invisible. I actually did get a tattoo.
from both?
Well, yes, from the teacher. He writes on you. And then, yes, Liang did write on me.
Okay. How interesting. And so your daily practice, did you have to get extremely vigilant once you started channeling?
Yes, I have to get extremely vigilant.
or what? What happens if you don't keep up your own practice?
It just doesn't go well. It really wears me out. And it's interesting. That's when the problems of the ego really come in and want to take over.
Oh, okay. Good. I like that you talk about that. One of my biggest pet peeves with spiritual practitioners is a lot of them, to me, do not have a solid foundation, and they don't continue to maintain themselves as well with cleansing and meditating and doing their own growth, etc.
Yeah.
So
it's a harder life, that's for sure, if you don't do it.
Yeah, and actually I was just going to ask you if you felt that, you know, sometimes people say to me, "Oh, you do readings, that's so wonderful." And I'm like, "No, it's not." Life is so much more challenging. It's almost like being a spiritual worker, either a light worker, or I call it being a spiritual warrior. It really means that we are taking on a lot more in terms of burning through karma and consciously seeking out to evolve and reach for enlightenment, and therefore the challenges can get quite complex and strange compared to many people that I know who's, you know, are worried about getting a new car and retirement. Do you find that with channeling that that has also sort of intensified your own spiritual path or the amount of growth that you go through?
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. And I think I spent the first 10 years of this resisting and trying to throw as many roadblocks into it as I possibly could.
And what would that look like? What do you mean throwing roadblocks at? What did that look like for you?
I wouldn't prepare. I wouldn't, you know, like book my plane tickets on time. I would, you know, have all kinds of stuff try to get in the way. I wouldn't advertise. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't keep it neat and try to make it happen. I was approached it in a very flaky way.
Got it.
Such was my resistance.
And did you find when you started channeling things like you got mysterious illnesses or you mysteriously got rid of mysterious illnesses? Were there any physical effects that you felt? Do you, for example, I know when I'm in doing heavy meditation work, I'm starving afterwards. I've been sitting doing nothing and I'm starving because of the energy that's running through. Do you, are there symptoms or signs or things like that that change for you when you started channeling?
Definitely a lot more eating, which I'm trying to get a handle on. Yeah, I don't know about mysterious illnesses. Sometimes I would temporarily take on stuff from people.
Uh-huh.
I would turn up with their symptoms, but that's very temporary. And I don't think that my health has deteriorated because of it. I feel very much the same, whereas sometimes I get whiny and run down and not very healthy, and then sometimes I'm fine.
Got it. So I also wanted to ask, too, because I think this is a question for lots of people who do spiritual work. You did eventually get a husband. And
I did.
Yes, and you were single when you first started. So I know sometimes people say, you know, if you're this spiritual or this is what you do, like as your work and it consumes a lot of your time, do you have to marry a spiritual person or can you not? And like kind of how does that work out? And I know a lot of times with people with readings, they say, well, you know, how can you even be in a relationship? Because you always know if the person's lying and, you know, it gets very uneven in some ways. So did you encounter anything around that that you could enlighten us about what that's like being a full-time light worker and how you dealt with that or balanced it? Or was it just totally okay and normal?
Well, that's so funny because it reminds me of a, I'll say, discussion I've had a few times with my husband where I basically, you know, accused him of not telling the truth. And he'd say, well, I didn't think it mattered because you knew anyway, because of course you knew anyway, which is like the ultimate cop out. But that's actually a good point about, I don't go around reading people. I mean, that's my job. And then I rest, right? So I don't go around reading my husband's.
Right.
To see if he's behaving or not.
But you have, I mean, at least for me, I know I do the same thing. And I think psychics and people who do energy work, we have this kind of boundary, like therapists. You don't go around therapizing everybody when you're off duty. It's just rude and it's invasive. But I also know that I'm very uncomfortable around people who are talking a lie, like they're saying they're okay and everything's great and it's not. It's very hard for me to be around that conversation. It's much easier for me to be around somebody who says, I'm not doing well, but I don't want to talk about it, that I can handle better. So I'm wondering if you have any of those kind of sensations. I know you're not reading, but you can never really turn off the empathy that you have and the sensitivity that you have.
Right. Sometimes that comes through and it's kind of, you know, a little bit of an exercise in minding your own business.
Mm-hmm.
And because sometimes, you know, when you catch somebody's mood and you feel like, oh, I must be getting this for a reason. I'm supposed to do something. I'm supposed to intervene. I'm supposed to help.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you have to kind of discern what's appropriate and what is help anyway. Sometimes just staying in the room with the person and minding your own business is a help, you know?
Right. Right. And sometimes I found helping looks like not you're not the one that's going to help. You let spirit help, and you just have to, for me, I know I have to sometimes feel everything that's going on, and that's it. I have to find a way to hang out with that and be okay with it, because there's really nothing I can or should do about it.
Right, which is exactly what the cultivation of your own practice is about. It's mm-hmm. giving you the foundation to be able to do that.
Yeah. It still makes me quite uncomfortable sometimes. So,
oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, sometimes it's like, okay, I'm leaving now. I'm going to go sit in the bathroom for 2 days.
Right. I just so, like to lie down with the TV on.
Exactly. Or a kitty or something. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if we were to come to a workshop, and by the way, Meg does workshops all over the world. She is based in Pasadena, but she does have workshops in wonderful places like Machu Picchu in Ireland, Copenhagen. I think you went there once. So really wonderful places. So if we were to go to your workshop, what could we expect? What would that be like?
Yeah, so my workshops entail a couple, like 2 hours on Friday evening and 5 hours on Saturday and about 3 hours on Sunday. And they start with just Friday evening is like a brief introduction. If any attendees are not familiar with the Sumphot meditation practice, and then just channeling of Kuan Yin on that evening. And then Saturday would be channeling of Kuan Yin. So in those sessions, Kuan Yin is very interactive with people in terms of whatever she's teaching that day, whatever her topic is, and helping people move their energy and meditating with them. And she may be giving very direct feedback or general feedback, but there's an energy that's being brought forth that people will sit with. And then when I'm not channeling Kuan Yin, it will be sessions with me, and I will be offering instruction on meditation and help with that, and working with subtle energies in terms of balancing and interacting with energies in the environment, and that sort of thing, giving readings. And it's sort of the time is split a little heavy on the Kuan Yin side, and then me working with people.
And the amount of time, the percentage of time spent meditating versus talking, I would imagine varies depending on the workshop and the population that's there. Is that true? Or
yeah, that's exactly true. It's that, you know, the idea is to kind of show up and decide, just feel and flow with whatever's going on.
Right. And so what is Sumphot meditation? It's quite an unusual practice, I believe. What is your description of it?
Well, it's largely Taoist in its history. But it is a practice that basically combines sitting in stillness with the movement of the subtle energies and responding to that movement. So it may entail actual physical movement or vocalizations or the expressions of emotions or all of the above. Talking in tongues is a big one. And all of that is, the word Sumphot refer to the divine energies of the heart, and all of that practice, that allowing for the expression of energy, is to continue to open the heart and heal all the traumatized aspects of self and integrate, you know, the divine, bring forth the divine and integrate the mundane and grow in terms of your waking life and your sense of spirit, and bringing those two things together.
So it sounds like some thought meditation is very activating. It's not just trying to sit quietly and still the mind and not move like some of the Zen practices.
Quite right.
Okay. I know I've been to some of those meditations, the some thought meditations, and it can be quite shocking sometimes when the entire room is howling and talking in tongues. And sometimes I've had the feeling like I'm in the insane asylum. Because it's, you know, most people, their concept of meditation is like Deepak Chopra, and you open your chakras and you see purple light and the butterflies and the unicorns come. And there are definitely moments like that in some thought meditation, but there's also a lot of what I call rotor-rooter work of clearing out the gunk that is preventing us from connecting to ourself and to a higher source. So it's quite dramatic sometimes.
Yes, so they refer to it as sitting in confrontation with the self.
I love that.
Yeah. And sometimes that confrontation isn't pleasant.
Yeah. So, and sometimes I know when I've gone to workshops with Liang and Wang Lo, sometimes there's a lot of repercussions after the workshop. In other words, it just kind of rumbles on for even a month or two. Can people get some kind of support from you when that happens? How does that work if, say, I go to a workshop and now my whole life starts shifting around? What does one do with that if they can't take care of themselves just through their own cultivation?
Yeah, well, they can certainly call me or send me an email and I can help them work through it. We can do private sessions to help them continue working through that so they can sort of equalize and harmonize with whatever that particular lesson is.
And what do you do in private sessions?
In private sessions, there's the menu basically is you can have an entire session with me channeling Kuan Yin, or you can have a little of me, a little of Kuan Yin. If you're sitting with me, there will be a combination of meditation, energy work, and reading that will go on.
And what kind of, when you say readings, what kind of readings do you do?
This is intuitive guidance. Okay. I don't refer to myself as psychic, but I do consider myself intuitive.
And do you ever do anything with these readings? Do you often pick up or ever pick up on health issues that might be happening or might be coming?
Sure. Yeah. And a lot of that, especially if I have someone on the table and I'm, you know, doing some energy balancing with them, that a lot of that comes to the surface. Yeah.
Okay. And so do you ever, aside from running these workshops to take people through an experience, do you offer maybe advanced workshops or specialized workshops where you teach people how to channel, or you teach them how to heal, or how to do readings, or anything like that?
Yes, definitely teaching people how to do readings, because that's a huge part of what we're doing is opening intuition in people, and how to heal, working with energy. I don't teach people to channel, and part of that is I think it's really a heavy load, and you have to have, I feel like, and this is not to say that I'm an incredibly cultivated person, but I'm telling you, it's been a trial by fire. And I do know people who have lost themselves in some ways, and a really strong foundation with a really solid practice of meditating and knowing what your center is, and working through this confrontation of self, as we said. I think someone really needs that. I you know, again, I have a very blessed and magical life, but would I, if someone gave me the choice to choose this today, I don't know if I would.
Right.
I don't know.
I understand. So how do you teach people to do readings? How do you start to do that?
I think by exposing them to the concept of subtle energy and feeling the movement of energy through their own heart and knowing their center. the opening of that heart makes us sensitive, right? So as you described, sometimes the workshop will kind of rumble on afterwards. That's the opening of that heart. We've remained sensitive, and we want to work with balancing ourselves around that. But that's where intuition comes from opening to that sensitivity of self first, then relating it to others.
So, but I've seen sometimes people are very shy or scared, and also a lot of ego issues, like not wanting to look bad or say something harmful. How do you actually encourage people to take those first baby steps of practicing a reading? Do you think the energy sets that up, or do you have a certain approach that you like to make it easier for people? It's one thing to study it, but then when you actually have to do it the first time, it can be kind of a big leap.
Yeah, well, we just try to make it as safe a circle as possible when we're getting people to practice this, because everybody has the same thing. And, you know, even people who have practiced over and over, they retain that fear of, I don't know why this is coming up, or, you know, they always want to qualify it and everything. But you can do it. We'll often do just word games where one person will just say the first word that comes to their mind and the other person will respond to that word, and it will turn into a very pointed reading of that person. Mm. And always just encouraging people, you can't do anything wrong. You can't look to be right. The way that you keep opening and strengthening this intuition is by, number one, not caring.
Right.
Number two, just forging ahead without stopping to qualify and test and make sure. You just say the words and be willing to be wrong, and it primes the pump, and that opens a flow. The more we trust, the more we can just trust it's okay, whatever I say, the more we open, we turn that spigot wide open to flowing with true intuition.
I like that description. That's excellent. You use also, I have noticed, quite a bit of humor. And could you speak to that, about why you think you use humor and what's the benefit of that?
Well, I grew up in a very funny family. It was a very sarcastic family too, so it's been I've gotten some lessons from that as well. But I think that for me, you know, when it gets too heavy, I mean, even in having this interview and using some of the words that we use, sometimes I wish I could escape that sort of new agey language sometimes, because it makes me stop and go, what the heck am I doing?
Right.
I think that laughter from the heart is one of the greatest medicines that we have. Mm-hmm. And we are talking about healing, and applied in the right way. I mean, there's a, you know, when the Kuan Yin energy comes in, it used to put people off how crazy her laughter would get. I mean, not only is she, you know, responding with the quivering heart and having tears with people, but she's making light. You know, she wants people to make light of their lives, no matter what's going on, because that's how we transcend. So she'll laugh like crazy. She'll make fun of people and laugh, you know. But hopefully with the sense of that loving energy. And it's very, I think the feedback that I've gotten is that it helps put people at ease. And it helps them feel like, okay, everybody here is basically human. So what am I worried about?
Right. When I have seen your work, I'm always impressed by your willingness to not look normal, and that right? So in other words, it kind of, because sometimes that warrior energy comes in and you're ferocious. You're like, you know, a lioness come to life. And then other times you go into this very, very soft place, and it really, to me, broadcasts a kind of permission to people that we do have a wide range inside of us. And it doesn't mean that we are that way all the time, but it also means we don't have to limit ourselves to always looking proper. And I think that's just so important that you know, sometimes I've met spiritual teachers and they always talk quietly and they wear white robes. And I just think, gosh, I bet they, you know, they don't even use deodorant. They're just perfect. And that scares me, you know, because I was like, I'll never be like that. Right. So I personally prefer studying with people that show me the range of our capacities instead of what I think my stereotype is of what ascension looks like. Because when I see that, I think I'm never going to get there. I'm never going to be that quiet. I'm never going to be that serene and that surrendering. I'm always going to be a little wacky and goofy. So I like that your teachings are very human and yet very spiritual at the same time. And it somehow, to me, models for people the permission to allow energies to impact us in very profound ways.
Right. Well, thank you for that. It's interesting because talking about earlier how I came into this practice and how it didn't scare me at all that people were rolling around on the floor and howling at the moon. Like I sort of, there was something in me that was longing for that freedom of expression. Mm-hmm. Because I am naturally very shy and secretive and extremely self-conscious. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting thing that I would lend myself over to that and continue to do that.
It is amazing. It is absolutely amazing. And doing it drug-free. I'm kidding.
Right. Yes, except for the NyQuil that I use to sleep sometimes.
So, excellent. So, I want to just kind of winding down here. I wanted to find out from you, where do people find you? And how do they find your calendar of what's going on? And can they come to a private session? Do you work by phone?
My calendar is on the Sinsi Center website, which is sinsecenter.com, sinsecenter.com. My calendar is on that, and a lot of explanation about the practice and Wang Lo Sinsi is at that site also. My email address is there, and email is the best way to get hold of me. And I do private sessions over Skype and over the phone. And look and see. Maybe I'll be doing a workshop in a city near you. I've got Portland coming up this weekend and Orlando the weekend after. And then in August, I'll have Atlanta and Memphis and Copenhagen in September.
Wow.
So there's lots of opportunity.
That's fabulous. So, and we have posted on Psychic Access Talk Radio, we have your contact information posted there with your bio so people can find you. And I believe your email address is on the Sinsi website as well, correct?
Yes, it is. It is.
Good. And people can come see you with for a private session without having to first attend a workshop?
Yes.
Is that right?
Okay. Yes.
Fabulous. So anything else you would like to add to kind of put a message out there to folks to encourage them on their spiritual journey?
Yeah, so I would say that over the years that I've been channeling this Kuan Yin energy, her message really has become, you know, loving. When we were talking about the different aspects of self that will reveal in this meditation practice, and her message is to love all aspects. It's all good energy. It just needs to be balanced. And the more that you can accept yourself and tolerate yourself and come into love and forgiveness of the self, that is our greatest contribution to this planet.
I love that. I love that the Kuan Yin energy that I've seen with you, it does embrace even what we might call the darkness or the dark side or the stuff that we are purging. It isn't about presenting as serene and calm. It's also saying, take that roaring fury in you, or take that depression in you, or take the avoidance in you and bring that to light and embrace that also, because then it kind of melts and dissolves.
Right. In that embrace, it becomes beautiful, and she encourages you to see the beauty in everything.
It does, and it also really helps to increase our compassion and patience with others, because as we can accept the darkness in ourselves or our so-called flaws and begin to see the beauty in them, I've noticed for myself that people who drive me absolutely insane, I have a lot more tolerance for that instead of having it drive me insane. It's just like a little tweak now, and then I kind of laugh and say, oh, I've been like that myself. And it's, that is a wonderful gift, to have that kind of compassion and patience without having to fake it with positive thinking. I actually have been able to get there energetically and emotionally, and I think that's a great benefit for the kind of meditation that you teach.
Right. Right. That is peace. That is peace right there.
I agree. Well, I thank you tremendously for making the time for being on the show, and you have been absolutely wonderful. And I love that we were able to look at the inner workings of doing spiritual work, so it's not so mysterious to people, that they can see that it is it has a kind of regular side to it, as well as a challenging side to it, and has a great deal of benefit to it and a lot of mystery at the same time. So I love that you're willing to reveal all that to everybody. So thank you so much, Meg, for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right. And I will talk to you very soon.
All right.
Thanks
a
lot. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you very much for that interesting interview, Nona Marie. And big thanks to Meg McLaughlin. You can find this very talented spiritualist at sincecenter.com. That is S as in Sam, I-N as in Nancy, S as in Sam, E-E, center.com. Now, I would like to take a moment to make a few announcements. Unfortunately, we regret to inform you that we will not be able to do any free readings tonight for various pressing reasons beyond our control. However, we will resume doing our normal format with the second hour being devoted to free readings next Thursday. We definitely apologize for this inconvenience. Okay. I also want to let you know that if you couldn't get our last show from last week, then you can find a recorded archive link, as well as archives of all previous shows, on psychicaccesstalkradio.com under the Archives tab. We want you to circulate these archive links and future show details to your friends and family. It's our objective to connect with as many of you as possible, so please share that link. Also, be sure to visit our psychicbloggers.com site to learn about everything from the paranormal to reincarnation to psychic development. Psychicbloggers.com is a veritable online encyclopedia, and it's 100% free. If you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com, where you'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each with their own unique gifts. Every psychic has a detailed profile for you to find out more about them and to choose from a list of some of the most authentic, gifted psychics around. It's an honor working with Doug and Psychic Access because of the high expectations required of each psychic. All of the co-hosts here on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com work at Psychic Access. And if you'd like a personal reading from any one of us, be sure to visit us at psychicaccess.com. We'd love to hear from you. And if this is your first time registering, you get a free 6-minute reading with the psychic of your choice. Incidentally, site owners and webmasters can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading on traffic referred to psychicaccess.com. For more details, visit psychicaccess.com/webmasters. If you like our show, and we sincerely hope that you do, by all means, invite your friends to join us in our chat room and listen to the Psychic Viewpoint. There's something for everyone, so please spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Back to you, Nona Marie.
Well, I cannot thank Meg enough for being on the air. It was absolutely fabulous. And Stephen, you are a great show host, as usual.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for keeping everything flowing wonderfully. And I'm very sad that we can't do readings tonight. Technical difficulties, very frustrating sometimes, but very rare also.
Yes, we'll get back on track next week and have that second hour for free readings for sure.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again.
Sure. So now what we're doing is, it's time for us co-hosts to sort of digest all that we've heard, all of these marvelous insights from Mrs. McLaughlin. And, since I'm gabbing, I might as well go ahead and ask some questions that popped up in my mind over the course of the interview. Do you mind if I share some of those with you, Nona Marie?
I would love it.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Well, one thing I think that surprised me was that Kuan Yin is an actual entity. I didn't think that I realized this. Was this a historical personage, or is this a spirit that has you've been around in the spirit plane to assist humans?
As far as I know, Kuan Yin is a historical figure, and she was, I believe, the mother of Buddha, much like the Virgin Mary. She was the so she has kind of the a parallel in Christianity, where we talk to Mary, we talk to Kuan Yin, and she is like Mother Mary. She is the great, all-loving, forgiving, encompassing female mothering energy.
We here in the West seem to have lost that ability to venerate the feminine. Would you say that's true, or would you disagree with me on that, Nona Marie?
Well, I agree with that. However, we did go through a big turnover that was called the Harmonic Convergence, and that was, according to the Mayan calendar, a switch from male energy dominating Earth into female energy. We could also say yang energy switching to yin energy. We can also support this through numerology, where we went into the millennium with the number 2 leading off the years for the next 1,000 years, and 2 is yin energy, and that is magnetic energy. So I think that we were, Earth and its civilization, we were destined to go through these phases as kind of processes of learning. So we had about 5,000 years of matrifocal, I think we had more of that, of matrifocal culture. We had 5,000 years of male-dominated culture that started with the agricultural revolution that caused a shift in relationships between men and women, because the men were hunters and gatherers, so the women were the heads of the culture. But when the agricultural revolution came about, men no longer had to travel. So they stayed home, and they got very involved with running things, and there was a shift in power. But according to all the kind of New Age and Mayan philosophies, the harmonic convergence is taking us back into a different era that's going to be more of a balance between the use of male and female energy.
Now, I think it would be, to clarify, I think we can get tripped up in thinking of these polarities in terms of gender assignments. Right. So what we're talking about as male is a yang force that penetrates. It goes out. It takes initiative. Whereas, if I'm correct here, the yin force is only different in quality and kind, as opposed to penetrating and going out, taking initiative. It has a more magnetic power. It sucks things into itself, and that's how it gets the job done, as it were. And so what you're saying is that now we're entering into a very big cycle where we're going to be venerating or getting into deeper contact with the magnetic forces, the feminine yin forces that attract, that suck in and pull into itself.
Absolutely. And actually, if we look at science, we consider yang energy electric energy that goes out and produces enough impact. And yin energy is magnetic energy, and we, our bodies, are an electromagnetic force. That's how current flows through us. That's how we can do MRIs and EKGs, etc. So we can also look, taking the male and female completely away, we can just look at an electromagnetic force. So to me, the essence of yin energy, the magnetic force, is a wonderful Zen story that I like to talk to people about, that to me personifies the power of yin energy, and that it is work also, which is the story of a student who goes to study with a Zen master. And this student prepares for years, studies and meditates and learns and studies the cones, and finally feels ready and gets an appointment with the master. And so the master agrees to see him, and they're talking, and the student is being interviewed. And while the interview is going on and the student is showing all his wisdom and talking about his great cultivation, the master is pouring tea, and the tea fills up the cup. And as the student continues to talk, the cup overflows, and now the tea is pouring over the table and onto the floor. And finally, the student cannot take it any longer and says, "Stop pouring the tea. The cup is over full. Nothing more can go in there." And the Zen master picks up the cup and pours the rest out and says, "As is your mind. I cannot put anything in your mind. It is over full. Go home and empty the cup." To me, that is the essence of yin energy. It is the constant emptying of the cup so that it can be filled from another source. Right. And that is what cultivation is about. It's not just going out and doing readings, which is the electric force, the manifestation, the outcome that we see, but we also need to constantly get energy and messages coming in. And if we're busy controlling our life and chattering and running around as a know-it-all, then we have no replenishment coming in. We have nothing coming in from a higher source. We have that full cup. And it goes also with the Zen philosophy that they talk about, always having a beginner's mind, which is right. If you've been a meditator for 50 years, you go into every meditation with a sense of wonder and a sense of, I wonder what's going to happen this time. Not, I know what's going to happen. I know how to meditate. So yin energy, if we just completely take away male and female completely, it really is the idea that electricity cannot flow without a positive and negative side to it. So we are built with positive and negative energy that has nothing to do with negative being bad. It's literally creating a way for a current to flow through us. And we are a culture in the West that completely worships yang electric energy. Just do it. No fear. What have you done? What have you done today? Yeah. Rarely can you say to somebody, you know, I just spent the entire day daydreaming, and somebody goes, good for you.
Yeah, for sure. I used to get in trouble for that as a child in school.
Yeah, and actually daydreaming is a kind of multiple intelligence, and it is a verified learning style in the teaching profession. With all the new data and research we have on teaching and learning, daydreaming is a very valid style of learning, but our schools don't allow it. We kind of slap the hand with the ruler and say, wake up and come back here. So it's like, go away from that yin energy and come back here and start producing something, even if you have no idea what to produce or what you're doing. So we are in a very electric or masculine or yang energy society, much more so than Eastern cultures, though some of the Eastern cultures that are very industrialized have gotten that way also. Like, you know, Japan perhaps has more of that energy going on now that it, you know, has entered the modern world and is no longer in the age of the samurai.
Could it be an influence of the West responsible for that, seeing that it's sort of a rift between it and traditional Eastern principles?
Absolutely believe that. Absolutely. And you know, we've seen that in some yucky areas too, where bulimia and anorexia have made their way to some of the Eastern nations when they never existed before, and some of the pressures of beauty and the pressures of having money. So yeah, Western culture, which is very much a young culture, had come to dominate the globe. And the speculation now with us being in a yin energy cycle is that there will be a kind of backwash and a rebalancing where people say, wait a second, that's enough of that. We want to go back to Earth. We want to go back to the greening of the planet. We want to go back to meditation. We want to go back to getting spiritual messages. So we're seeing a lot of that. I don't think it's the majority, but...
Or we could make a similar error and embrace the yin to the exclusion of the yang.
Exactly.
Like we did this time. It's interesting. I'm curious what Steve and Maureen have to say about this, because I know they have a lot of interest in these matters as well, and, you know, especially channeling energies in their own special way.
Well, my view is that everything should be in in balance. So we know of the yin energy and the yang energy, but we don't always ensure that these energies are in balance, either in the world, in our communities, or within ourselves as individuals. So if you go back to the astrological analysis, you can see in an individual or in a nation the breakdown of energies. So the high level being, well, how much yin energy is there? How much yang energy is there? And then you break it down further into the elements and the signs of the zodiac and so on and so forth. But we're all, in effect, working to become whole, to become harmonious, to become balanced. And that involves looking at oneself, looking at the energies as they are right now within oneself, and working to balance them. So if we are being too yang in certain situations, to bring in more of a yin influence to balance out the yang. And, you know, if we've got too much fire, if we're using fire inappropriately in our lives, then we need to balance that out with other elements. So my view is that we've overly emphasized the yang in the world generally. I mean, it was interesting when you look at cultures, because you find that some cultures are described as more feminine than masculine. So Italy and Spain and France, they're generally indexed as more feminine cultures because the matriarch seems to have more respect and more influence over the menfolk and the families. And then you find the ultra masculine culture of Australia and the United States. So I think that we're just working to balance these energies out. But I always think of everything on a continuum. So I think of yin and yang energy as the opposite ends of a continuum, and the point of balance obviously being in the middle, a little bit like happiness and sadness are the same thing. They're levels of contentment, but they're opposite ends of the continuum. And as we come to the center, then we find harmony. And really, we should all be looking at ourselves as individuals and questioning that level of balance. But we should be looking at our societies, our organizations, our governments, everything really, to try and bring back balance. And certainly, you know, Nona made a very important point about nature. We're not in balance with nature. We're completely abusive of nature. And yeah. We trot around thinking that because we've got iPhones and internet, etc., that we're so advanced, but we're not. And
I read a very interesting quote along those lines from the very famous British spiritualist Alan Watts. He said, and this really raised my awareness to the issue, he said that the West and the East have two different contradictory ways of looking at nature. Whereas in the East, they see nature as a thing that grows spontaneously. We here in the West tend to look at nature as a thing that's constructed, that's built, that's engineered. And, you know, that really resonated a lot with me, that sort of insight. What do you think about those comments from Alan Watts, Steve?
Well, I think that we view pretty much everything as available for our consumption, and that's not balanced. I don't think we have much respect for resources or for nature or even for other human beings. You know, I often laugh when we talk about aliens, and there's been a lot of information in the media this week about, you know, looking for life on one of Jupiter's moons, and NASA saying that it's very likely that we will identify other civilizations in the next 20 years. And then there was a report about a painting on the or carving on the on a cave in India. It's 10,000 years old, and it's clearly of a UFO and extraterrestrials. And the archaeologists are baffled, not sure how to interpret this one. I think it's pretty obvious how to interpret it. But when we talk about extraterrestrials and, you know, making contact with other civilizations, well, if they are civilized, if they are civilizations, which I don't think we are, why would they want contact with us? Where if you were observing planet Earth right now,
right.
looking at what's happening in Iraq, looking at what's happening in the Gaza Strip, the people that have been bombed have got nowhere to go. Look at all of the disasters all over the world, and those are just two of them. Would you want to know these people, these human beings? Would you think that it's a civilization? I don't think we would. And my great hope is that when we do ultimately make contact with another civilization, that they are actually a civilization and they put us to shame, and we learn at lightning speed how to evolve and come back to balance, you know, balance with each other, and that's balance within ourselves, balance with the food chain, with the planet. There's so much work to be done. I hope that we find a civilization that knows how to balance the yin and the yang.
Yeah, I'm almost human, but I don't really like to talk to us either. So I sometimes totally see what the aliens would be going through. Is that right? Now, this is awfully analytical. I need some emotional grounding here, Maureen.
Well, that's echoing. Whoa.
I hear that. We called the aliens and they showed up.
Well, you know, I was just about to say something about the ebb and flow is the most important. If it's echoing out there, I guess it's the mothership coming to take me away. The reoccurrent, you know, the ebb and flow pattern of coming and going, or the decline and regrowth, I feel is the way we get our balance. It's simply where I'm sitting, my view only, but it's very important to have the decline and regrowth of things. You know, I love union, everything, Carl Jung. And I wanted to say your guest, Marie, was just lovely. She really was. I just thought she was such an authentic. She got right to the point with some things that I've always had a lot of passion or felt very strongly about through the course of 25 years doing this work. And it's been like someone once met me, and I used to be on FM radio in LA, and someone heard me, and she came to get a consultation, and she saw me. She goes, "You don't look like a spiritual person. You don't talk, you know." And when she was talking about that, it's like, you know, you hear psychobabble, right, Marie? You'll hear psychobabble because of psychologists, they call it that. But you hear the New Ager, which he was talking about a little bit, the New Ager type of ways of to talk. And it dawned on me, it's like sometimes, you know, there's a delusion. So I like to go in the ebb and flow. I like to go decline, and then I like to rebirth or regrowth myself back. But it's interesting. I have gotten that a lot, or I've been asked it a lot, even from people that do the work or did work in, you know, for helping of others in our work type of deal. Maybe not exactly what I do. But, you know, and also the sense of humor. It boils down to that. We were talking about that, Stephen, in the chat.
Yes, we were.
It's funny because it really does have a lot. I mean, it takes, for me, it's without my sense of humor and with everything, and it just comes naturally, so it's not like I force it. But it really is something that keeps me alive.
Yeah, because sometimes life tries to wipe the smile off of your face, and it's your responsibility to, you know,
wipe
keep
it back
yourself
on.
Happy. Exactly.
Like, even when you're in the decline mode, that's the balance. That's what I feel. So I feel that I'm pretty funny, and the fact is it comes from some painful things that go on mostly, but I laugh at myself, but also something she said I really liked. It's like, in some ways, people have often told me this, I need to hear it. I almost beg to hear it. And Julie knows this in the chat room. I'm always like, just someone said, just get over yourself, and just be, because I get very, like your guest was talking about, or Marie, you might have been talking about this. I get very self-conscious. I am shy. People don't think so because I talk fast or I talk a lot, but I get nervous. But I am actually a very shy person. But I always have this feeling that I'm not. good enough sometimes, or I'm not helping. It's just those are my thoughts. I have need to quiet my mind or just go into ebb and flow of things. But if someone just said, just get over yourself, it's simple. And well, she said something about that. Yeah.
You've got that Pisces rising, Maureen, yeah. Which is very receptive, very, very receptive. Maureen and I were talking about the magnet force of the feminine earlier, and that's all Pisces right there.
So I guess I have a reason.
I'm thinking it would be hard to, quote unquote, get over yourself in that sense, because you just got so much stuff streaming into you because of that Pisces rising sign. It's other people's stuff that I would imagine, coming into you. And that's got to be difficult.
Like, what up with that? And thinking that I'm a Leo. Then I'm that Leo.
Now, that's a very masculine influence.
Yes, it is. So I got this fire. But I am what I am. I am what I am. I don't need to be a doctor. But anyway, I really enjoyed the interview, Marie, extremely. I mean, it really was lovely hearing it. And I was relating to it. I don't say resonate because I don't use that word. But I was really relating to it. It was nice.
Yeah, I was.
Good. Well. Calming. Very calming.
Yeah. She's good, Meg. I like her.
You both together were wonderful, too. I'm not just saying that because I feel like, be nice to you. Really? See how I laugh at that? I just felt it was very nice, and it was fused well. And she's, I just thought she was just right, like a Woody Allen movie, when he's right in it. just right there, and just truth. It was great. It was great. Thank you.
We're actually coming to the end of another wonderful show here. I'd like to thank Doug, who always toils behind the scenes to keep the rest of us looking good, our executive producer, Doug C. I would like to thank also Maureen and Nona Marie for joining us tonight, as always. And Steve, you have something for us next week, right?
I do, yes. We have a great guest, Mary Lamondo. She's been with us before. She's an Egyptologist and astrologer, and we're going to be talking about the latest archaeological discoveries in Egypt, what they mean to us, and also looking at the ancient Egyptian history and culture in the context of metaphysics and the ancient mysteries. It's going to be a great show.
Yeah, definitely. That's something we cannot get enough of. The ancient Egyptians just left us so much of interest and importance to analyze. So your next week's guest is indeed going to be very stimulating. Do not miss that. Can you repeat her name, please, Steve?
Mary Lamondo.
Mary Lamondo. We're going to be talking about Egyptology, archaeology, astrology, a whole bunch of very fascinating and compelling ologies. We definitely do not want to miss that next Thursday night, The Psychic Viewpoint. That pretty much wraps it up, ladies and gentlemen. We thank you very much for listening to us tonight, and we will see you at the same time, same place next week. Please have a wonderful week, everyone.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.